All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. On this week's podcast, we're going to celebrate the album that changed guitar playing forever. We're going to give you the inside story of Van Halen's self-titled debut. You're going to learn about this legendary recording and all the stuff about it and how it introduced the world to Eddie Van Halen.
You're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, changing rock history one podcast at a time.
All right, everybody, it is the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. We are back at you once again in your face, ready to rock out with our talk out. Lily V6, Keith the Hawk Hawkins are all here. The Power Trio is back. So, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of this band you may have heard of one time, maybe heard of, maybe haven't. A little band called Van Halen. We're going to be getting into their debut album. This album was really important. For a lot of reasons, but one of them being what it did for guitar. Guitar was like, it was like everything up until to Van Halen, and then everything after Van Halen, and still going. Absolutely changed guitar playing forever, and has, you know, the influence is still felt throughout music today, guitar playing today. So we're going to get into that here in a few minutes. But first, we're going to go around the room, say hi to everybody. Keith, what's up, buddy?
How you doing?
remember, it's audio. You have to talk.
I couldn't find the damn code for the Zoom.
So. Okay.
Well, like sometimes, you know, you pick the wrong week to quit sniffing glue, you know?
Oh, legit. My goodness. Legit. It happens. And, you know, I have picked the wrong week to quit drinking and sniffing glue and doing weed several times in my life. You know, right? So we've got the Hawkster here, and we've got the Sixer.
The Sixer's here, too.
What's up, Lily? How you doing?
Good. There's shows coming up. I'm super excited. So.
Woo! Shows coming up. Super. What did you guys do anything cool this week before we get into our actual topic?
I had a pretty uneventful week, I'm not going to lie.
Really didn't do too much?
Not too much, no.
What about you, Hawk?
I was in Las Vegas for my stepdaughter's wedding for 4 days.
And how was that? How was Vegas?
Awesome.
Okay.
But hot. Yeah. 111 there. 111 in the old crispy fryer. OMG.
Somebody was saying today that in San Francisco, a few days ago, it was like 123 degrees.
In San Fran?
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah, because California's having a major heat
wave. Yeah, it's usually not that hot.
Fires
there.
And all kinds of stuff, too. You know, they get
all... They always got fires, but, you know.
Yeah, they said it's super, super hot. And I guess the mayor of San Francisco told everybody, set your AC at 78 degrees and turn off all unnecessary electronic
items. And everyone said, yeah.
Yeah, everybody said, screw you.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, they'll listen to him or her or whatever they are.
There's a lot of people in California right now that are not happy.
Especially with all the peaceful protests going on. You know, they got to get their flat screens and their computers and everything. So,
I mean, if you're going to loot that flat screen, man, you're going to want to fire it up, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. You're not going to go to a peaceful protest and just start, you know, come back with a, look what I found at the peaceful protest. It was a 60-inch flat screen. I don't know what happened.
But we can't turn it on now.
You can sit there with your you know, $300 pair of Nikes and your flat screen that you can't turn on, and just, you know, sit in your 78-degree apartment
and die.
With no windows and die. Yeah. So, but anyway, so we're going to get into Van Halen in a minute. Let's talk about real quick, give credit where credit's due. Shout out to our affiliate at Rock Rage Radio. You want to go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app. You can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. Is it commercial-free, Lily?
It mostly. Some people will put commercials in.
They'll do their own,
yes.
for their own shit.
Like, but mostly.
We are about to do right now. because what I really want to mention to you guys is when you're out doing those shows, those virtual shows, people are scrolling by on social media, and you got to get their attention somehow. One of the best ways to do that is to have something eye-catching in the video, and what better way to do that than have a really eye-catching paint job on your instrument, no matter what it is you're playing, from, you know, that big fat Fender Precision Bass to maybe a little ukulele, whatever. And if you need that done, you got to get that done. You want to talk to Wolf's Customs. Talk to Chris Thunderwolf Dotson at wolfscustoms.online. They've been doing custom guitar work, custom musical instrument work for a really long time. They even do drums, right, Keith?
They do.
That's right. So check them out. Go to wolfscustoms.online and check them out. I need to give an announcement. You're no longer, well, at least for the time being, you're not going to hear any bands played. And I want to warn all you guys out there, Facebook and YouTube are cracking down. So I know, you know, there's this, have you seen the quarantine cover challenge?
Yes.
That's all going to get deleted.
Which is dumb.
That's all going to get deleted. So be careful out there. If you continue to do it, you will be banned. You could get a 30-day ban. I guess you could play your own music. Although I have heard of people having problems with their own music because they have it through ASCAP and BMI, and it just gets YouTube sees that as like a registered copyrighted material.
Wow.
And you can get busted for even playing your own music.
Ridiculous.
The music you're hearing in the background right now is all what they call copyright free, duty free, whatever you want to call it. And it can be played. It's out there to be played on podcasts and things like that. So that can stay, but I can't play bands, at least right now. Until something else changes, I would say that you start complaining to Facebook and YouTube right away, because guys, if people like us aren't able to play this music, it goes away. Mm-hmm. Especially right now, when a lot of these bands that we love can't go out and play shows, this is a chance for them to get heard, and it's really something that I think was intended to protect artists is actually hurting them. One of the guys you should check out if you want more information on this is check out Rick Beato's YouTube channel. He talks a lot about this. And so you should send some complaints and stuff like that to Facebook and YouTube and see if we can get them to maybe kind of loosen this up a bit. Because we're not... What, right? We're getting rich off this, right, Lily?
Oh.
You know, every time we play a band, you know, we just make $1 million. No. We are doing this to promote this music, you know. So this is we're hoping to help people out. I feel like we're here to serve. That's the way I look at it. You know, we provide an entertaining platform. You get to hear some music maybe you don't know about, and it gives these bands a chance for you to check them out. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen right now. So, all right. So, boohoo session is over. We're going to talk about a lot of fun stuff tonight. So let's get into Van Halen.
You want me to talk about some history?
Yeah. Do you want? Yeah, Lily, give us a little backdrop on it, and we'll jump into
a little rundown of what's going on with this record.
All right. So Van Halen, February 10th, 1978, was the release. I was not born yet. Self-titled debut album. It ranked at number 19 on the Billboard 200 with a diamond certification, selling more than 10 million copies. It contains some of the signature songs that we know from the band. Gene Simmons had a hand in financing the band for a 3-track demo that had zero interest from record labels. But he promised... Whoa.
Sorry.
But he promised that once he returned from touring, he would get them a record deal. After recording demos, they were offered several concert opportunities and finally signed with Warner. So they used to play out at like the clubs, like Whiskey A Go-Go was one of their clubs. They did the club scene for a really long time before they were signed. Took 3 weeks to record and was mostly recorded live. Cost $40,000 to produce. Initially, the critics hated this album. Rolling Stone, we all love, obviously, said in 3 years Van Halen is going to be fat, self-indulgent, and disgusting, following Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin right down the toilet.
Whoa!
That's a direct quote.
Okay.
And however, the album was regarded...
Was that from Yawn Winter?
No, I didn't write who it was from.
Chris sounds like Chris DeGaulle or one of those guys.
The album was regarded by fans as one of rock and roll's greatest debut albums, and later on, critics followed suit because who pays for them to make money? It's the fans. So,
I would definitely put this in the top 10 greatest debut albums of all time. I mean, the track listing.
Top 10.
At least.
This should be in the top 5. It might even be in the top 3. You're talking about just debut rock and roll albums. I mean, it's up there probably definitely in top 5. I mean, in my opinion, you go ahead.
I agree with you. I was being conservative. I would say it's the best debut album of all time. But I mean, the track list reads like almost like a greatest hits.
Yeah. Pretty much, you know all the songs.
I know you know they all made rock radio. They're all even some of the more like less
popular ones,
like Atomic Punk, and so still got on the radio. You can you hear them on the radio. So it's a giant kudos to Van Halen. Important record. Go ahead, Keith. Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off, brother, because I know you got a lot to say. Jump in.
I just think it's one of these albums you would call a game changer. It changed rock and roll. Again, I'll agree with what you said before. It's like there was these heavyweight bands like Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin.
Sabbath.
The Beatles were gone by then. But it's like, you know, when you come up to like all these bands in the 70s that were ruling the rock radio stations. I mean, yeah, there's some great ones, but then all of a sudden you come into the late 70s, early 80s, you start to have these bands fizzle out a little bit. But Van Halen come out and it was a game-changing album. I think it might arguably be the best debut album of a rock band ever. I mean, it's really got... It's far better than Hootie and the Blowfish debut album. I mean,
really?
That's a lot
better, too. I don't far know about better. That, man.
No offense to Hootie and the Blowfish fans, but I'm just saying that was... I think it was Rolling Stone or someone said this is one of the greatest debuts for rock album of all time for Hootie and the Blowfish. So that goes to show you what kind of drugs they're on. But that album is, it's a head to toe. It's just, it's rock and roll, man. I mean, it is after 1978 and after when the 80s came in and all the, like, all the hair band stuff came in, all the shred guitar. How many guitar players in the room, raise your hand, wanted to be Eddie Van Halen? Yeah, if you don't raise your hand, you're a liar. Because that guy, he influenced everybody, you know, from Vito Bratta all the way to freaking, everybody loves him, you know. So it's like, you know, even Steve Vai loves him. I mean, it's everybody just like, he's influenced every guitar player since then. I mean, if you're a rock guitar player, you're going to be influenced by anybody in Van Halen. If you're not, you're probably lying to either yourself or your mom or whoever, you know. So it's just, but it's just it's a great rock and roll record. And it's, I think, probably top to bottom, it's, could be arguably their best records. I mean, I hate to say they shit the bed after that. The other ones after the debut, I mean, it did a cover on there, but I think they did too many covers on some of them. And I like some of the later David Lee Roth, Van Halen stuff. I'm not as big as a Sammy Hagar fan. I think he's great. He's very talented. I thought their stuff with Hagar was a little too watered down for me. But I think as rock and roll records goes, and especially Van Halen records go, I think the first one might be their best one.
I think you're making a really good argument for that. However, I have heard different people say different music. What do you call it? Not necessarily critics, but like analysts, like people that like, you know, do comparative studies of albums and stuff. A lot of people feel that 1984 might be the best album of the 80s. I've heard people say that. It's definitely one of the best albums of the 80s, and it was a giant hit maker for them. And if you kind of look at their career, this album comes out really, really strong, and then the subsequent albums up until 1984 don't really have the kind of impact that the first one did until 1984. They did with some covers, Keith. You know what I mean? Like Dancing in the Streets and Oh Pretty Woman were big pop hits for them. But in terms of their own music being like big on pop radio, it really wasn't until 1984 with I'll Wait, Jump, Panama, Hot for Teacher, that, you know.
When they went back to the energetic sort of
and it became, stuff. And also they had great videos for all those songs.
Legit.
You know, that was really, that, you know. So let me ask you guys this, and we'll go around the room and get everybody's opinion. I think that this is true, but Van Halen is the sort of kickoff or the sort of, what's the word I want? The prophecy of what was to come in the 80s with the quote unquote, and for lack of a better term, hair metal bands. Now they got the sexy front man, the hot guitar player, the really fun rock, sleaze.
I think definitely.
I mean, what do you guys think about that?
David Lee Roth was made for the 80s and being on TV and fronting that. And I think that obviously it sort of created a formula for hair metal. So
it sort of like laid the groundwork. What do you think, Keith?
I hate the enough that you're saying that. I've always heard people like, that's one of them bands that gets confused sometimes. It's like, I don't think they're a hair metal band. Not that anybody said that, but they did lay the groundwork for that kind of music. And I think that, and like I said, every guitar player wanted to be Eddie Van Halen. They wanted to two-hand tap and do all the shit. But it's like, I thought they were, musician-wise and just song-wise, head and shoulders above any of those bands. I know they influenced those bands, but it's kind of hard for me to, say they were one of those bands. But it's weird, but that you can influence so many bands that I don't think you are exactly that kind of genre, though.
Right.
I mean, that's just straight up rock and roll. It's just a straight up rock and roll band with some, definitely killer guitar playing. And the rhythm section isn't bad either. I think they probably don't get enough credit, actually.
No, totally underrated.
So let's talk a little bit more about the album. It was done, as Lily said, done pretty much like very few overdubs, which is a real testament to what a great band it was. You did mention Gene Simmons, mm-hmm. Gene tried to sign them, mm-hmm. but because Kiss was touring so hard at that time, he felt like he let them out of the contract because he was like, I'm not going to get back to you guys, and you guys have a chance to go do something, and I don't want to hold you back. He was a huge fan of Van Halen. He thought they were absolutely monsters, as well as he loved David Lee Roth's look. And he bought David Lee Roth his first pair of leather pants.
A girl didn't buy those.
No, it wasn't a girl. Not
crazy.
Not like Vince Neil. Not like Vince Neil. So he bought. There's a great discussion about this in Gene's book. If you guys get a chance to read it, that's the only reason why I know something about this. But he heard them and he was completely blown away by them. He just recognized that this band was like it. Also, when they went on their first tour, they opened for Sabbath, and people, like when Sabbath came on to play, people were like calling for Van Halen to come back out. Mm-hmm. So they kind of blew Sabbath with Ozzy, by the way, off the stage. Now, granted, this was Ozzy's drunk era, and so we don't want to poop on the Prince of Darkness too bad.
No,
that's bad juju. But they did. That's what a force this was. The cover photos were taken at Whiskey A Go Go, which was a venue that they played.
They played there often. They were there probably every single week.
Right,
playing that actually the whole strip, but the Whiskey was their most famous place they were at all.
Yeah,
the time.
And a lot of bands.
Yeah,
that was a staple for
a lot
of
bands.
That was
the place to go.
And they actually shot three videos there. They just did them very quickly. They lip synced them. They're not live, but they did. I believe Running with the Devil, Eruption, with You Really Got Me, and I believe they did Jamie's Crying as well.
Nice. And of course, the Frankenstrat is on the cover as well. Before it was red, it was white then.
Yeah, that guitar is gone. I mean, that's one of the lasting influences of Van Halen, is what he did, not just for guitar playing, but for the guitar itself.
And that's what we were talking about with Chris.
Yeah, he changed. He literally changed the guitar itself.
Yep.
Did you know, Keith, that? That Eddie and Alex started out on opposite instruments. Alex started on guitar.
I do know that. Yeah, though Alex was playing guitar and Eddie was playing drums, and it just wouldn't have been the same. Could you imagine? Alex Van Halen. Do you ever hear anything bad about Alex Van Halen?
No.
No.
You gotta have some kind of attitude to be up there in front of the band. That's why I'm behind the drums, man. I don't want no attitude. I just hide back around.
You hide behind your drums and you do your thing.
And Alex Van Halen seems like a kind of like chilled, reserved kind of guy. He can't be up there, man. He's gotta be behind the drums doing his thing.
Less pressure.
I mean, David Lee Roth's bigger than life, you know what I mean, when he's done his thing. And Eddie's, you know, it's like I said, that rhythm section doesn't get enough credit because it's like being Alex Lifeson and Rush. You're just in a band with some badasses. And those two up front are bigger than life. And then, you know, you got Michael Anthony and Alex Van Halen are probably don't get enough respect that they deserve, you know?
Yeah. I think that Michael Anthony, I mean, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, he's in that band because of his voice. And he has a great voice. They had a different bass player when they started. And they started out as a... what did they call it? They called themselves Genesis.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I'm like, hello, didn't you know there's a band called Genesis? Then I realized there's a band called Genesis. And this was like in 74, like when they very first started. And then they changed the band name, I believe, to Mammoth.
And yeah. They did call it a Mammoth at one point. Yeah, that's right.
And it was David Lee Roth that said, man, your last name is really cool. You should just call the band Van Halen. Well, and the rest, as they say, was history.
Rock and roll history.
What do you remember? Where were you, or what were you doing, or how did it impact you when you first heard this record, Keith?
I think I actually heard the first time I heard this record. One of my stoner friends probably had it on a cassette or something. But I think just they put it in and we were listening to it, and it was like Running with the Devil was the first track on the record. And you heard that simple bass line come in, but then when that guitar comes in, it has that different tone. A different sound. You hear those crazy leads. The vocals are over the top, and it's just it's very energetic rock. It's almost like something, you know, if I can put it like another, not just a great debut album, but it's like, we can even think about this as a topic down the line, where it's like, there are certain albums that just change the game, man. They just take it to another level. And that's one of them albums you heard it, and you were like, there's something different about this band than everybody else wasn't doing, you know?
Yeah, there's that. There's definitely that element to it. Something that's I found really fascinating about one of the things that caught me off guard about the when I heard this record the first time. The first song I heard was "Running with the Devil." Was pretty much everything about it. The guitar sound floored me. Like, I had no idea, like, what is this? Like, how does he make his guitar sound like that? It was incredible. It sounded so huge. But one of the things that's very interesting about the song is Eddie plays the same solo twice. There's two guitar solos on it. And I think there's one note difference between the two solos. They're the same solo. And the solos are very melodic. They aren't... I don't believe if there is any two-hand tapping, it's very brief on those solos. They are very melodic, kind of like, what's his name? Elliot Easton, you know, or like one of those Mike Campbell kind of solos. Just very like...
Yeah, you know, very tasteful and melodic, but, a certain amount of, I mean, depending where you're at, level of like simplicity behind it, but it's just well written and well done. It's like it's the Neil Sean of, you know.
Yeah,
he always plays the perfect thing for every song.
You're right. Neil Sean is another example of that type of that playing. And I wouldn't know. Like, it's one of those solos too. If you ever cover this song in a band, you have to play that solo. There's just like,
oh yeah, everybody
you,
knows
you can't
that shit,
improvise
yeah.
that. You've got to play that because it's like part of the song. And I think the fact that he plays the same solo twice really kind of hammers that in. There's nothing, you know. As of course, on the next song, he whips it out. You know, he's like, "Look,
yeah, I mean, you got to rock out with the guitar out." So I mean, yeah.
But let's go ahead and run down the track. So the first track is "Running with the Devil."
Yep, second single from the album, inspired by the Ohio Players song "Running from the Devil," ninth greatest rock song of all time, named by VH1 in 2009. Surprisingly, the first thing you don't hear on the album is Eddie's guitar. It's Michael Anthony's bass. The song begins with car horns taken from the band's own vehicles, which I think is cool. I didn't really realize that was a thing. The lyrics have often been thought of as satanic, but the meaning has never been revealed by the band. It's said to be about life of a young touring band, and the lyrics "Running with the Devil" are a reference to freedom.
That's exactly what
I sort of agree
about.
With.
It's not satanic at all. It's no. about... It's about like life on the road and living on the edge and
the whole thing, which is also the first one I heard from the album, but I didn't hear it till probably about 9 years later.
Right. And I'll be honest with you, I did not hear it when the band came out either. I heard it a little bit later. I wasn't a music head in 78 the way I was in 82. I started really one, something like that. They had
I think
a few
that
albums.
They were like more, way more satanic when Sammy Hagar was in the band, you know, when Love Comes Walking In and stuff, and that stuff will burn you, man.
Yeah, man. Don't. Ooh,
when you think of Satan, you think of Van Halen. I mean, that's what
I'm losing my religion even as you speak.
Wow. Exactly. There it is.
There's some very
you, cool, Michael Stipe.
And I love Mike's bass on that. It's got distortion. It's huge. You know, it's absolutely insane. Everything about that is crazy. Also, you talk about not giving enough credit. How about Alex's snare sound? He's got a very distinctive snare drum sound. You know, he wasn't doing the John Bonham type sound, but he had his own thing.
Yeah. It's called tape. Put a shit ton of tape on your drum and let that thing just completely get the ring and every kind of, like, anything sucked out of it. And just play a big, thick, taped-up snare. And, hey, there's people around the same time or slightly before him, Stuart Copeland, people like that, that are rock and roll drum legends. They never shied away from the tape or in the early days, man. I don't know. As things go, you know, later on, he experiments with some different sounds. But in them early Van Halen records, Alex was definitely putting on some tape and a lot of deadening going on those records.
So it's a classic song, and those background vocals just come in like, and I've said it before, like the freaking Beach Boys. I mean, that is just insane harmony on that refrain running with it. And what's David Lee doing? I can't even do what he does. Because he usually sings in that gruff register, but he hits that like, rah, 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 that real high.
Yeah.
It's insane. I was listening to it today because I was reviewing the album. And I was trying to like, okay, I could sing until he does that. I'm like, nah.
It's like, I can't even.
That's like dog whistle stuff. That's insane. Ted, I've heard different stories about it. Yes, they recorded it live, but I also heard that Ted Templeman did not. I've heard two different accounts. I've heard that Ted Templeman actually did not like David Lee Roth's singing, and it was very hard for them to get him to sing in key. I don't know if that's true. I've heard one of their former managers released like a tell-all book last year, or maybe in 2018, about them, and really, you know, put some disparaging, you know, mention some disparaging kind of things about David Lee Roth. I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. So
until we interview him, we would never know.
Yeah, we're gonna have to interview him. That's how we need to get him on call. Lily, get him on the phone.
All right, I'll work on that.
Send him a picture of your boobs. There will be no problem.
I feel like I'm too old for him.
Wow. what's the next song on the album, guys?
The next song is Eruption. Amazing instrumental rock guitar solo by Eddie Van Halen, also considered one of the greatest rock guitar solos of all time. Popularized the guitar tapping that you guys were talking about earlier. And then it segues into the next song that we're going to talk about in a minute. And those two songs are often played together on the stations. Actually was the B-side for Running for the Devil.
Running with the Devil.
Yes.
Or Running for the Devil.
Running with the Devil.
Running for the Devil.
It does start with a short intro with Alex on drums and Michael Anthony on bass. The piece has been part of the stage act since as far back as 1975, but it featured no tapping originally. It was initially not going to be on the album, but Ted Templeman overheard it in the studio and decided to add it. Eddie says he didn't play it right, and every time he hears it, he thinks he could have done better.
Well, he says there's a mistake on it, yeah. And
I want to know what the mistake is.
I want to know what the mistake is. He said there's a mistake on it, and it drives him crazy.
He's never going to tell.
You know, he's never going to tell you what it is. But I remember hearing that and going, like, what the hell is this? I mean, as if Running with the Devil didn't, like, already kind of, like blow my mind. This was like, oh my God.
I know. Like, I got to hear it live twice. It was exciting.
And there were guitar players all through the 70s that were doing a lot of soloing. Peter Frampton, Johnny Winter, Rick Derringer, Alvin Lee. These guys were like, they were known for Frank Marino. They were all known for, you know, long solos and all kind of stuff in their sets. But this, this is like, excuse me, gentlemen, sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. And yes. That was just like, and the guitar has never been the same. As far as the two-hand tapping stuff goes, I mean, yes, Steve Hackett had from Genesis had experimented with it. But nobody did it the way Eddie did it. To create that type of sound with the arpeggios and everything. And everybody wanted to do it after that. And Keith mentioned Vito Bratta, who was a big two-hand tapper. Steve Lynch from Autograph was a big two-hand tapper who really, you know, capitalized on that technique. Lots of guys. Keith, you want to weigh in on any of this?
Yeah, you never see the video, though? There was some Italian jazz player from, like, 1950-ish, the late 50s, who was doing that stuff on a big-bodied guitar and, like, two-hand tapping, killing it. That's funny because it's, like, so before Eddie, but you ever have to wonder, did he see that, or he just kind of, sometimes that like really inventive kind of thing that everybody goes, oh my god, he was the first to do it, or you know, arguably this guy did it or whoever did it. Sometimes it's just a mistake, man. You just try things and you're like, and it's something that just leads to something cool, and you're like, oh, I bet you I can get a, you know, make myself sound different or set myself apart. So sometimes things that became a trademark for somebody may not be their first pick, but it's, you know, something they've tried and they've succeeded at.
Yeah, they were able to do something with it in a, you know, way that somebody else wasn't. I have a podcast, you guys can go back about a year or so ago, called Why Eddie Van Halen May Be the Most Important Guitar Player in the History of Rock and Roll. And I discuss all of that stuff. There was also the guitar player from Canned Heat, who was famous for doing tapping on the neck as well. But nobody did it. I think one of the reasons why it worked so well for Eddie was because of his sound. That sound really kind of like allows the two-hand tapping to kind of like really kind of pop out without a lot of effort, you know, because you're using that all that gain and everything, and you can you have a lot of fluidity to be able to do that with that because of that type of sound. But that isn't all that's on there. I mean, Eddie was also famous for other techniques like tremolo picking. And there's tremolo picking all over Eruption as well. And people thought that was so insanely fast. Now, when you fast forward in history a little bit and you hear people like Michelangelo Baddio or even Steve Vai and these guys like that who really play like maybe seven times faster than Van Halen, you know, to us, our ears, maybe it doesn't sound that fast. But at that time, that's what kicked off this sort of like nuclear arms race of guitar. Who could play the fastest, you know, and who could. So, you know, you come down to people like Jeff Watson and Brad Gillis from Night Ranger, who are both amazing guitar players, both heavily influenced by Eddie Van Halen. And it just captured everybody. It was like the kind of the right thing at the right time. You know what I mean? Like music was changing and they were there.
And there it is.
Oh, show.
Let's talk about the next song.
The next song, which is always followed by the first song on the radio, or the last song on the radio, is You Really Got Me. Band's first single, and it's an updated cover of the song by the Kinks, who had done it 14 years earlier. Popular radio hit that helped them jumpstart their career. Eddie doesn't like that was their very first song. He's a little disappointed.
Yeah, the record label put that as their first. Yeah. He wanted Jamie's Crying to be the first single. Yeah. Which wouldn't have been a bad first single. That's a great song, too.
Yeah, I mean, either way. But they have a cover as their first song. It was a result of an encounter by Eddie Van Halen and the members of the band Angel, specifically Barry Brandt, who was their drummer. They had both been bragging about their new material they had coming out, and Eddie ended up showing the demo of the song. The following day, Ted Templeman told Van Halen that the band Angel was putting out a cover of the same song to release before Van Halen. As a result, As a result, the song was rush released as a single before Angel could do it. And I'm going to guess a lot of people don't know the band Angel, but they obviously didn't do it before them. So they, Van Halen wins.
Well, Angel also didn't have Eddie Van Halen.
Right. True.
If they would have gone, we really.
I could
need
be
Eddie
wrong
Van
on
Halen.
People not knowing who Angel is. I could be completely wrong, but I mean, look who won the battle of the song coming out.
Battle of the song.
Battle of the release.
Battle of the release. Do you like this? So what do you think of this, Keith? Do you remember hearing
this? I like their version of it.
It's a good version. I mean, it's definitely, I think the original has a little bit more growl to it with the guitar tone. I mean, definitely Eddie souped it up. I think the Kinks version's cool. It has, like, you know, that whole British beat thing, but it's definitely like a version on steroids, we'll say. So it's like definitely an amped up version of it. And I think it's cool, and David Lee does his thing on it, so it's a great cover tune. I mean, Van Halen, like other great bands of, you know, the past and bands that are, you know, some of the great rock and roll and hard rock bands of all time. Van Halen, like Metallica, always likes to put a cover here and there, and they've always had covers on their records or done, in Metallica's sake, done whole friggin' albums of covers. But Van Halen definitely likes to dabble in the cover, you know, genre, if you will. I mean, they definitely have them on their records, and it was a good pick for them and something that's, you know, they could easily knock out of the park.
Dave Davies reportedly did not like Van Halen's version.
I'm sure he didn't.
And check this out, Keith. This is hilarious. Apparently somebody came up to Dave Davies at a concert after one of their shows and said he loved their great cover of the Van Halen song, "You Really Got Me."
Do you think that really irritated him? Because I didn't, like, excuse me?
You guys did the Van Halen song, man. Cool.
What does that tell you? What, sometimes cover songs can, you know,
better.
get done better. And I mean, I'm sure Dave Davies couldn't, you know,
there
play
is
anywhere near Eddie Van Halen. He probably couldn't carry his freaking pick to the gig. But I mean, it's one of those things where it's just a good cover. I mean, it's not like my all-time fave. I mean, but it's a good cover of a good classic rock song.
I loved it. I think both versions, like when I was a kid, I definitely loved the Van Halen version better. But as I, like, grow up, I really like the Kinks version too. And I hear the sort of, like, merit of both. The Kinks version is a little, like you said, has more growl, has almost like kind of a punk rock kind of, like, nasty kind of thing to it.
Well, you know, there's like that old story about him cutting the guitar amp, or like cutting the speaker with a knife, or something happened with a guitar speaker, and, you know, it's made it come out sounding all crazy, and then, but that's, you know, worked out for him, so that's good.
What's next on the list, Lil?
Next on the list is "Ain't Talking About Love." Eddie wrote the song and didn't consider it good enough to show his bandmates until a year after it was written. He said it was supposed to be a punk rock parody, didn't sound punk at all. This is one of the few David Lee Roth era songs that Sammy Hagar was willing to sing in concert when he joined the band in the mid-80s. That's all I have on that. I mean, I like the song.
That's an insane song. I mean, that's an insane riff. And there are tons of YouTube videos devoted to how to get the "Ain't Talking About Love" guitar sound. Because there are certain effects that he uses, and people to this day, I mean, are spending outrageous amounts of money for that flanger that he uses on those two notes, and the phase shifter that he uses, that very famous, and I had to go buy one. I had to go buy phase 90, because that's what's on "Ain't Talking About Love." I had to have it.
Sucker. What a sucker, man. You're going to write the next "Talking About Ain't Talking About Love"?
Sorry.
But this song has a little bit of the soft spot for me. This is one of the first songs I learned how to play on the drums, actually. It's one of them songs I can remember going back in the day and trying to, like, work that out and trying to get the fills and everything together. So thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex. What's next, Lil?
Next is "I'm the One."
Great vocals on this. "I'm the One." It's a great song.
The first side of the album had been started, but nothing but energy, and they decided to end the side one in the same fashion. Actually, the whole album's energy. One of Eddie's favorite guitar solos is this track. This is sort of an R&B jazz sort of infusion song. Super energetic. I'm told it's one that's very hard to play correctly. I don't know, because I'm not a guitar player. It was done all through their club days and beyond, and when you see Roth front the song, it's for sure his, like, ultimate, like, peacocking moment.
His peacock.
Four non-blondes covered it for the 1994 film Airheads, and a lot of people didn't even notice that it wasn't Van Halen doing that song in that soundtrack.
So
they did it so well.
I mean, Van Halen is a very distinctive band.
Yes.
They're hard to cover. I mean, when they switched singers, even, you know, it was still, like, sounded completely different.
For sure.
So you take one element out of Van Halen, you really kind of have a whole new thing. Keith, you got any comments on I'm the One?
Are we going to get to rank them later, you think?
We're going to rank them. Okay. I'm just writing them down.
It's a great song. Let's move on.
Okay, what do you got next?
Next is, we're on side two for those of you who had vinyl. Jamie's Crying. One of the best love songs by the band when it was released as the third single. It didn't even chart by 1989. It was sampled by Tone Loc for Wild Thing. Eddie's riff and Alex's drum reached a massive audience at that time.
Wow.
It's one of those beloved one night stand type of songs with the girl once more, you know those love songs. But it was a concert mainstay during the DLR era, for sure. David Lee Roth, for those of you who don't know who DLR
is. It's got a cha-cha or kind of feel to it or something. What's that groove that they're doing on that key?
You could call it a cha-cha if you want. I mean, it's kind of hard to decipher when he plays it. He plays it like things so straight most of the time, so it's you can't get that swing you need. But
I mean,
you
know. I don't know. I think it's a grooving song, man. I always loved the feel of it. I always loved the lyrics. I always loved the background. That's one of the things I keep coming back to with Van Halen is, like, I think without those background vocals, they could kind of very easily just been like a great band, like a cool band with a great guitar player. But with those background vocals, it makes it so insanely catchy, pop.
I love
fun.
That song.
And I think the song is like, even though it's a song about a girl who's like upset because, like, you know, he banged her and then, you know, never called her again. And she's like, she wants to send him a letter and all this stuff. And he's like, you know, I don't even know what your name is. You're Jamie.
Which one?
Yeah, which Jamie? That it's got this super fun kind of like vibe to it. It's insane. What's next?
Next is Atomic Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie's guitar fireworks all over the song. The use of the word punk is in the title. It's interesting because they don't even like punk, and it's not even a punk song. They have repeatedly expressed that they're disdain for punk in interviews. It's an underrated song on the album that moves from Dave's sort of hornball routine leaning towards a more post-apocalyptic story about the band in like this alternate apocalypse universe, which is kind of cool. But they didn't just do sex in this one. They didn't just do sex in this one.
Wow, Van Halen song is not about sex. What's the world coming to?
That's cool, man. I'm glad later on and down the line in like 87, 88, I'm glad that Guns N' Roses did their version of a song called Mr. Brownstone, but that's a horror thing.
Legit.
so there's a controversy? I'm not aware of this.
It's just it's the same idea.
It's something I hear in the beginning, that's all. I hear the same like kind of guitar effect that, you know, it's going on. It's definitely a lift, I think. But, I mean, what hasn't been done at this point?
Well, I mean, like I said, everybody copies Van Halen. Everybody, yeah. Every guy after 1978 who like who was a guitar player, had big records and stuff, owes some little wee bit to Eddie. Sorry. And even metal guys now, because that amplifier he designed with PV is like the staple of so many heavy metal albums and so many heavy metal bands use that tone. Eddie Van Halen is still being heard even today. What's after Atomic Punk?
After Atomic Punk, we have Feel Your Love Tonight. It's one of those testosterone-filled Ode to Young Lust. There would be no Unskinny Bop, no Lay It Down if this song wasn't a thing first. The song is a fleeting moment of partnership where the clothes come off and is the end game and the theme of the whole song. Like I said, sex. It's super catchy but often looked over because they have had so many already amazing songs on the album. So it's just sort of by the wayside a lot of the times, but it just showcased Alex's drums.
I also think, too, the song, the album is a kind of all killer, no filler.
Yeah.
Feel Your Love, Keith.
I mean, what would the world be without Unskinny Bop, you know what I mean?
I'm just saying it wouldn't have existed.
Oh, I know, I'm just messing around, but that's good. That's, again, one of them songs that just has that huge poppy hook harmony lines going on. I mean, every friggin' song has Michael Anthony just blending that voice with whoever, you know, it's just like Dave Lee Roth, and he does it again when later on with Sammy. I mean, his voice just blends with whatever. It's like a fine wine. It just goes with whatever you want to pair it with. But his voice is just sampled, like layered on top of that stuff, and it's amazing how, like I said, and I'll agree with you on this one, if they could have been just like a guitar-driven badass bands. But with those friggin' harmonies going on top of all that stuff, that's that put them where they needed to be. For a while there, Van Halen was, you know.
Yeah. You can't cover Van Halen without great background vocals, and just like you can't cover AC/DC without a great rhythm guitar player. You know,
it can't be done.
It can't. And I love this next song. What do you got?
Little Dreamer.
Little Dreamer.
Written before they met Ted Templeton. It's one of the songs that shows Van Halen isn't just a party rock band. It's sort of like one of the first power ballads that came out at the time, and it's showing off DLR actually singing rather than squealing, which is nice. And it's just about someone who's faced with the reality of lost promise. So it's nice.
Little Dreamer, Keith. Any comments?
Another pop masterpiece off the record. It's just a good, straightforward, like, you know. But it's a nice mid tempo song. It's not crazy heavy or nothing. It's just got. I wouldn't say it was like, you know, one of my faves on there, but it's definitely a good poppy little number. Snappy, you know, it's snappy.
It's very snappy. Speaking of snappy,
what's next? Ice Cream Man.
Oh man.
Cover of John.
Summertime, sitting back, need something to keep you cool.
Cover of John Brim's 50s era blues jam. It has been sung by DLR long before Van Halen was a thing and considered by the band sort of his pre-band solo act, but it does fit into Van Halen's sort of formula of what they do. He loves this song. It's his tribute to the blues. He plays the acoustic guitar on it for the first verse. Of course, he dedicates it to the ladies, and because it's very raunchy, if you listen to the lyrics. Gene Simmons actually didn't like the song when it was presented for the demo, but they recorded it anyway, and now it's a part of history.
Pudding and banana and Dixie cups, all flavors and push-ups, too.
It's all dirty. It's dirty ice cream.
Well, that's the blue. I mean, don't you remember the song that Aerosmith did?
All of Aerosmith songs
are dirty. No, the one that they did an old blues song, too.
Which
they
one?
Did 10-inch record.
Oh, my God.
Which was an old song originally recorded by Bull Moose Jackson, which is a filthy song. You know, and a lot of people don't realize it too. The song, like Hound Dog, is a filthy song too. You know,
it got by
everybody because it was the 50s, but it's a very song too. And there's something about the blues, man. There's a lot of blues songs, man, that are really like code for like getting it on,
doing the dirty.
Do you think of Ice Cream Man, Keith?
You know what? This is one of them ones that just kind of sits there for me. I mean, it's just like a bits of bluesy, like just. Shuffle tune. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I've heard it, you know, it's like you hear it. I'm still to this day, probably DD probably still plays the crap out of it.
Yeah.
It's one of them songs that probably have just, you know, taken that one place, for example, it's probably being played on every damn classic rock station ever.
Yeah.
And
legit.
It's a song that I think it's just like an song for me. I'm sorry. It's
really,
just one of them ones that doesn't do it for me.
I really like it. And I think it's also a sort of.
It's a fun song, but I just don't like. It's not my thing.
That's all right. I think it's kind of a foreshadowing too of where David Lee Roth was going to go with like songs like "Just a Gigolo" and that type of stuff. Like
California Girls,
California. You kind of hear the beginnings of that, I think, with "Ice Cream Man" for sure. The criticism that always comes up about "Ice Cream Man" is it's a blues song, and Eddie Van Halen's solo is so not a blues solo. It's not even close to any kind of thing that any kind of blues player would play. So that was always been the sort of criticism. Like, you know, that's the thing Eric Clapton criticized him about, that he can't play blues. But, hey, it's Van Halen. And there is a track, though, right after this, isn't there?
Yes, On Fire. It has not been played live since the last show by the original lineup, which took place on September 2nd, 1984. The reasons they think is because they can't maybe hit the vocal high notes anymore because they are super high in some points of the song. But it could justify a heavy metal tag because of the way the singing is and the way Eddie's riffs are. It is heavier than most of their songs, so especially when they're doing the part of "I'm on Fire." Sounds like it's coming sort of from like the depths of hell sort of thing. I think it's pretty cool.
Wasn't there something about like this not being on the cassette version or something? Or?
That I didn't look up. I
heard something about that. Somebody could let us know if that's true. I had heard that.
But I think it's a good song. It's a
little
heavier.
Are you familiar with this song, Keith?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that it is missing on some of the original presses, but I don't know if it was when it was added. I do think this song is probably one of their more metal tunes of all time. I mean, it's really heavy compared to the rest of the album.
Yeah.
And the rest of their library, it's really up there with a lot of, like, their heaviest tunes. I mean, right now I'm drawing a blank on their heaviest hit, but I mean, it's definitely a tune that would be right there with the heaviest ones, whatever ones those are.
Right, right. I like, you know, like, I mean, they did some serious stuff, you know, like Mean Streets, which is a kind of like very kind of intense in face, not fun, you know, more like kind of a serious kind of song. But, you know, they never stray too far from that swagger and that sleaze. You know, they just never really love. Did. Until Sammy Hagar took over.
Then it was all love.
Then with Sammy Hagar, it was all about the love. Love comes walking in. All right, let's rank them before we get out of here. We're about ready to wrap up. Hey, guys, if you want, speaking of great guitar, you need a custom paint job on that guitar. You need to get a hold of wolfscustoms.online. Talk to Chris Thunderwolf Dotson. Tell him that Ludini sent you. And shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. We're going to rank these bad boys. What do we got? What's going to be number one, guys?
Running with the
Devil. We're going there, or we're going in the reverse order? We're going, what is 11 tracks, right?
Okay, there's 11 tracks. You want to go to 11? Go ahead.
I Have You Really Got Me as number 11.
What is it?
You Really Got Me.
Well, you like it that much, huh?
Yes.
I'm going to go with, for me, like I said, you could just tell my
Ice Cream Man.
Presence of Ice Cream Man is just not for me, man. It's just like, it's a blues number. Blues starts to wear on me after a while. I mean, I know everything's influenced by the blues, but that one's just not strong as the rest of the album.
We'll go with that. So what's number 10?
My number 10 is On Fire.
What about you, Keith?
My number 10 is Feel Your Love Tonight.
Okay. We got to compromise. That's going to be On Fire is going to be number 10. What's number 9?
Ain't Talking About Love.
What's yours, Keith?
Little Dreamer's my number 9. That's a poppy number, but it's still a little too poppy for me.
Little Dreamer. I love that song, but yeah, I got you. I mean, this just for you young folks out there, just go listen to the record, because there's really nothing bad. We're ranking them, but there's nothing like
they're all good.
They're all good. It's all good stuff.
No, yeah, there's nothing horrible about the record. I just think if you're going to rank them, I have
absolutely.
I got to start doing a little bit of eliminating.
I got you, brother.
Process of elimination.
What's number 8?
My number 8 was actually Little Dreamer.
What's your number 8?
You Really Got Me. I do like the Eruption, You Really Got Me kind of connection, but it's a solid cover, but it's not great. You know.
Okay, what's number 7?
My number 7, Feel Your Love Tonight.
What's your number 7?
My number 7 is Jamie's Crying. Sorry, I was reading the wrong shit.
We're going to go with Lilies on that one. I'm trying to alternate between the two of you guys. Okay, so
can we just have her?
What's number 6?
I'm the One.
What's I got Ain't Talking About Love.
Okay, so Ain't Talking About Love is going to be number 6. Okay, what do you got for number 5?
Atomic Punk.
What do you got?
Atomic Punk.
Oh, the Sixer and the Hawkmeister. They agree off for once on something. Okay, what do we got for number 4?
My number 4 is Jamie's Crying.
What's your number 4?
On Fire. It's a great... It's just a rocker, man.
Well, We already have that at number 10, so.
It kicks ass, but we already picked it.
The ones that are left are I'm the One, Eruption, and Running with the Devil.
My number 3 is Ice Cream Man, because I didn't rank that yet.
Okay, so what do you got out of I'm the One, Eruption, and Running with the Devil?
That's my number 3?
Yeah.
I have Eruption. It's great, but I'm not a guitar player. It's great. I love it, but it's, you know, still not like a... And it's only how long? I mean, it's just...
What are we going to say? Okay, so that's down to I'm the One and Running with the Devil. Running with the Devil has to be number 1,
That's number
right?
1 on mine, and Eruption was my number 2. So
Running with the Devil's not your number 1? I'm the One is your number 1.
I'm the One is the most effing underrated Van Halen song ever.
It's a great song.
Ever. It's fucking awesome. I'm sorry about my language. It's awesome. When I listen to it today, instant goosebumps, man. I'm telling you, that song, it should have been the number 1 song on your freaking record. I'm telling you, that song is so kick-ass. Then I drop off from that like nice shuffle into that sort of like a cappella vocal thing. I mean, that shows a different side of that band. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great song. That's the most underrated Van Halen song of all time. That should be up there with any of the ones. F Jump, I want to hear I'm the One.
All right.
And there you have it.
And there you have it. And boom goes the dynamite. There was other stuff I wanted to do tonight, but because I thought we were going to need more time, so I came up with some other material, but we didn't need it. We jerked off on Van Halen so hard that, like, we
I mean, we could talk about this all day, I'm sure.
Yeah, we could go all day. So, anyways, guys, Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, you want to go to lulombardirocks.com. We're going to kind of continue the conversation. You going to hang out for a little bit, Keith?
Okay.
And we'll figure out what we're going to talk about next week. We're going to start doing some stuff different. We're going to start polling you guys about topics and stuff, and see what you guys want us to do.
Yikes.
The second week of every month, guys, is the album. So if you have an album you want us to talk about, let us know. If you are a member of LouLombardiRocks.com, let us know in the group there, and we'll take it under advisement. If it's cool, we'll probably do it right away. I mean, we're always open for stuff. So in about a month, we'll be doing another album. So keep that in mind. Shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Go to RockRageRadio.com and WolfsCustoms.online to get that custom paint job on your musical instrument. Keith, anything you want to plug?
For the second week of the month, if any of you guys pick a Kiss album, I'm taking it a sick day that week.
Let's not do Kiss, guys.
No Kiss.
You can do Kiss if you want. I'll just sit here and I'll listen and drink. I just can't. I can't be honest with that kind of stuff. I'm sorry.
Well, you could talk about how much you hate it. I think that would be great. I think it would be hilarious.
No, I don't want to make any enemies. Not that I give a shit. But I mean,
there's actually a lot of people who don't like Kiss. You probably have a lot of people on your side, quite honestly.
There's a lot of people who don't like Kiss. That's not. It's all right.
It's probably more like a jealousy thing. It's like, I've never seen so little talent go so far.
Well, here's the thing with them is, like, I think they're polarizing. You know, there's people that really love them, and there's people that absolutely hate them, you know? That's just, which is one of those bands. It's one of the things that makes the world go around. Not everybody likes the same shit.
That's a beautiful thing.
That's a beautiful thing. Anyways, we're gonna go to LouLombardiRocks.com. That's our private group, and we're gonna hang out and party a little bit more. We're gonna try some of this. We're gonna give a shout out to Beth, who gave me this wonderful cherry bomb
moonshine.
Keith, did you say this cherry bomb moonshine?
No.
We're gonna die tonight.
So we're going to have a little bit of that here. So
you're gonna be tore up from the flora.
We're done.
We're gonna have just a little wee bit. We're gonna take it real easy. Take
in
it
these
really
cutesy
easy.
Little glasses.
All right, you guys have a great week, and we will catch you guys next week with a new wonderful, exciting topic. Lily, what do you you want to go ahead and plug your?
Sure. My show is Thursdays, Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays. I said that already. 6 p.m. Eastern on Rock Rage Radio. You can download the app for free or just go to rockrageradio.com.
And Keith, we have anything you would like to plug?
I'm going to start recording a lot, so hopefully something will be out.
Ooh.
A friend of mine took over a studio for a guy that moved on to a bigger studio, so he got the smaller one, and maybe we can I can start churning out some more hit songs, as they would say.
I want to give everybody a little bit of something real quick before we go. This past week discovered a young guitarist, 23 or 24 years old. His name is Marcus King. He's got an amazing voice, an amazing singer. I mean, amazing guitar player as well. And there's this core group of guys and girls too that I believe are like the next generation. They're carrying it on, even younger than like Derek Trucks and those guys. These are guys that are like, they're real young. They are excited about the guitar and are making great music. Him, Billy Strings, and a couple other guys like that are really taking it to another level. So I just wanted to kind of give a shout out to everybody that if you're looking for something new to listen to, you want to hear some great stuff, just try it. Just go to YouTube and search Marcus King. He does a lot of duets with folks as well. He's got an amazing voice. Young guy, can just sing on plays guitar kind of like a combination of, say, Warren Haynes and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Sings kind of like Aretha Franklin, has a real high, that high tenor, but very soulful kind of voice. So if you are looking for something like that, you like the sort of blues-based stuff, I can't play any because we'll go to Facebook jail. But you guys can check him out. Just do a little search for Marcus King. I would recommend that you do it on YouTube because he's got just some amazing video there. So you guys can check that out. All right, guys, you've been listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. We do this live every Tuesday. And shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Thank you very much. Check us out at lulombardirocks.com. We'll catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.